Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Michael. Nice to be with you today.
Yeah, great to have you here. And I'm always excited to hear about Africa.
Yeah. I was just thinking, Michael, that I was going to say, you know, it feels like this is the most exciting trip yet. And I thought, gosh, that even sounds familiar to me. Do I say that every time?
It's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're leaving next week. Let's see, today's Tuesday. So, yeah, truly a week from right now, we will be getting on the airplane.
Wow.
To set off on the long journey. And the trip that we do in what is our summer, their, quote, winter, is nice because it's longer. So we'll be there for, I'll be there for actually close to a month.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's really neat because we can really, the in-between trips, in between the summer trips, are what I call business trips. You know, we go, we check in, how are things going? You know, we've got a long list that we kind of knock through really quickly. And the summer trips afford us a little more room to explore and vision and, you know, build community and that kind of thing. So it's really fun that way.
Yeah, the word that comes to mind is training as you talk about all that.
Well, that's a really good word for it. Yep. We get trained. They get trained.
Yes.
Yep. And this is really, truly an amazing trip. We're kind of bringing a dream team with us.
Wow.
Yeah. So the way it's worked out is there is a woman who is, she actually runs a microcredit business associated with eBay.
Uh-huh.
And she's coming with us. She's extraordinarily schooled in everything there is to do with finance, and specifically finance in the developing world.
Wow.
So she's coming just because she knows our work here in the U.S. She's been on retreat with us before, and she's a great friend of Sherry's. And anyway, so she's coming because she's inspired by how we do things, and I think her knowledge is going to be incredibly valuable to us in terms of, okay, so she really understands the vision. Now help us with a little of the economic side of this. You know, what are some of those principles that we might be able to apply here?
Right, right. Given our experience in microcredit.
Yeah, well, and microcredit and just kind of the whole thing, business plans. One of the things she's going to do, which is so fun, is offer to any family in Cantalomba who wants it to sit down with them and make a family business plan.
Wow.
Which will be, of course, extraordinary. I mean, shoot, I doubt many families in the United States do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll sign up for that.
Yeah, exactly. I know, actually, yeah, she should put that on Sangha Market, huh?
Right.
But to sit down with them and to say, what are some goals you have? You know, get them to vision a little bit, dream a little bit, and then help them to see how a very small amount of money set aside over time can actually move towards a goal. I think the cooperative in general is seeing that for themselves right now, where they suddenly have these fairly large sums of money. It's their money. It's not Living Compassion, the United States money. It's not our money. It's their money. And they are beginning to be able to get to make decisions about what do we want to do with that money? Do we want to reinvest it in something and make it grow this way? Would we like to spend some of it here? Would we like to give out microloans? Just whatever they think is the best thing. And I mean, the reason I thought of this business plan thing is that one of the things that feels like is making a very big difference is Martha, who is an accountant in Zambia, who works, you know, with us, so she does all of our bookkeeping and stuff there, is also doing finance classes with the co-op there. And I just think that's making a really big difference for them. I think we mentioned on the blog that a couple of them have even opened bank accounts, which is completely unheard of in Cantalomba.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's that, and just, I mean, I could go on and on about that, but because there are other things, I'll move on. Another woman who's coming with us is, again, someone who loves the awareness practice that we do, and she's on board with all of that, and she's so knowledgeable about all things to do with specifically African development. She's lived all over Africa. She actually lives in London. She's from England. But she's lived all over Africa. She works with another NGO that does work in Zambia as well as some other countries. And so she's going to be with us for, like, I think it's close to 2 weeks, like 10 days.
Wow.
And that, again, is just such a such a blessing for us, because she understands the how, she gets that, and she also just has a wealth of experience that she can bring to it. And we're excited to have her just get in there and brainstorm with us about, with fresh eyes, you know, what does she see? What things occur to her? And I know for her, she's really excited, as is the first woman who I talked about, be with us in that capacity in practice. Because, of course, you know, the second woman I'm talking about, she is so used to being in Africa, but she's never been in Africa, say, with Sherry Huber or on a, in a retreat kind of a setting.
Yes.
So she's really excited about that piece of it.
Yes, yes. It seems like that combination together makes for a real win-win.
Yeah, it really does. I just think it's, I really, on so many levels, I think this is going to be an extraordinary trip. And then, if that weren't enough.
That's not enough.
Exactly. We've got Jasmine coming, who people may remember that Jasmine is the woman from Canada who contacted me just before the May trip, saying that she was born in Zambia, moved from, her father's Zambian, her mother's Canadian. She moved from Zambia when she was 2 years old to Canada, you know, has led a fairly privileged lifestyle. She's in the design business and really wants to open her own business, wanted to, but wants her product made by a cooperative, sewing cooperative in Indola. But of course, I mean, how is she going to start a sewing cooperative in Indola? She lives in Canada. She's only been to Zambia once since she was 2 years old.
Yeah.
She Googled and found us.
Yeah.
And that has just been really quite extraordinary. I mean, we get, you know, we get lots of people who find us on the web, and, you know, they email us about different things. And so at first I just called her up thinking, huh, this will be an interesting contact to make. But, boy, is she, she's an amazing, amazing woman. And I'm really excited for her to come with us. At first she was thinking, you know, no, I really can't. I mean, August, that's too soon. And then when we both realized how much potential there is in this opportunity, she just basically rearranged a bunch of things in her life to make it work. She's hopping on a plane. She's actually going to be there also close to a month. She's coming, I think, like the 10th of August, and she's staying into September. And she's got a whole business plan, and she's going to get the gals to be making blankets, baby blankets, that she's going to bring back to Canada. I mean, she's got the whole thing set up, and it's really exciting because it's basically the Cantalomba Co-op's first chance at truly official kind of product being bought, you know, from the West. So it's a huge opportunity for them.
Yes, that's great. And they did make that prototype, which she loved, I remember.
Exactly, which Jasmine brought back and got really good feedback from her colleagues.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so it's really exciting. I got, the other day I got this amazing email from them. We had talked about that they're going to create a cooperative manual, they're calling it, where they'll list, you know, sort of what's their policy on when a new person comes to the cooperative and how much they get and just sort of all the, you know, procedures, policies and procedures of the cooperative. And when I got it, I had such goosebumps. I couldn't believe it because it was a much sort of larger, I'll say, document than I had expected, where I'll just read to you the very beginning of it, how it starts out. It says, purpose of this manual, to achieve its vision of making Cantalomba stand on its own by the year 2030, the cooperative has come up with a best practice manual which will guide us and align itself to the demands of all our stakeholders and strive to accomplish its goals.
Wow.
And I just was so excited by that and thought, wow, they came up with that. I've never ever talked with them about a year or a, you know, anything like that. And I just,
wow,
it was just so exciting that they came up with that at the time when we have this amazing team who can be there and essentially be at their service, that these folks who are coming with us, that me and Sherry can basically show up there and say, this is, you guys are doing amazing work and we want to serve. And so what do you need from us? And what they need from us is, okay, well, how does this work and how does that work and how can we connect with the donors in the United States and what, just all the different pieces that we can bring to it to help bring them the resources that they need to make this happen.
Wow. Wow. What I hear in that is everybody taking responsibility for their role.
Yes, exactly. It's such a partnership.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
And the way you describe being of service to them is really great.
Yeah, it really is great. It's like everyone gets to be of service all around. And at least as far as I can tell, well, maybe for me, it's one of the deepest needs. One of the things that brings the most joy is to be of service. And that you know, to be in a situation where it's one of those, gosh, am I the giver or the receiver here? I forget.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I know we're running short on time, but I want to say one more thing, which is that the BridgeWalk team is back there. They're brilliant, and they're coming up with all kinds of really fun ideas. I'm not going to give it away, but there is a really fun idea in the works for the BridgeWalk ad campaign where, you know, raising awareness about the BridgeWalk coming up, having people come, you know, doing events to support it, and a really fun thread that might kind of run through the emails that go out about it, and also weave in the blogs that Sherry and I send. So I'm not going to give it away, but watch it. It could be kind of a fun game.
Yeah, I can hear your excitement. I'm going to have to cut you off before you give it all away then.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wonderful. So we will follow along in the blog.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Well, just as soon as we can, we'll get the first blog out to you.
With the usual picture from Johannesburg Airport.
Yeah, exactly. Obligatory sitting there with the yep.
Jen, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Michael. Have a great show.
Okay, we will.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
The miracle.
I can't wait. I hope I get to go on that trip.
Yeah, I think you do, and I think they need you.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do think they need you. How's it going with you?
I'm great. I'm great. The miracle continues, and we're here again.
Yes. Yeah. Gotta love that.
Yes. Yes.
I was having a little one of those moments today, and maybe I know Jen is still listening, and Dave, and maybe they can help me with this. But I thought, you know, usually when we're over there, of course, we can't get to a telephone that will enable us to participate in this show, which is something that's very hard for me. Is, you know, that's not exactly accurate, but I would wish that it could be different. And so I'm thinking, you know, every year things do get kind of better and easier and smoother, and maybe this year we can be some of those folks who are calling into the show at 2 a.m. I'm gonna make that a priority for me.
Great, great. Yeah, I remember several years ago we did it a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
When you all made that extraordinary effort to get
mm-hmm.
up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, it was fun.
Sherry, I have some announcements here. The first Mountain View Zen Center workshop with you, Sherry, will be on September 11th.
Date to remember.
Yes. And the title is Practice Being What We Want for the World, which sounds to me like a good idea.
Mm. Always, huh?
Always. And it's our fervent hope that we'll have the technology in place to offer this remotely to anyone, anywhere.
Yes, I heard a rumor that was in the works.
Yes, and we'll keep people posted on that. Coming up before then, on Saturday, August 7th, will be another at-home working meditation retreat.
Hmm. Very popular little item for anybody who hasn't participated in that yet.
Yes, the ever-popular. And coming up even sooner than that, you will be at Mount Madonna this weekend, July 30th to August 1st.
It is true. It's a fabulous place. If somebody has a weekend and they just don't have any plans, then come and join us there.
Yes, yes, it is fabulous. Great. And we have callers here.
Perfect.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, it's Jonathan from England.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hi.
How goes it?
It's fallen off a cliff.
Uh-oh. it was to be expected, though, right?
I had a car accident.
Oh, that wasn't. Goodness gracious. You're okay?
Not a bad one. But it was enough for the practice to just crumble. Or for conditioned mind to sort of stand around going, oh, that wasn't real. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And other stuff too. But...
And it's interesting how it makes that conclusion, right? How it reaches that conclusion. Because one would think that when life is difficult, that would be the time that we would want to bring more conscious, compassionate awareness to it, not less.
And that's what I've been struggling to do, yeah. I had a slightly different conclusion, though, which was that I realized that there's a big part of me that doesn't want it.
Of course.
To work.
It's called egocentric karmic conditioning /self-hate.
Sure. And I think it's...
And it's not you. So let me just jump in there with that. Don't own it. It's not you. Not a big part of you that doesn't want it. It's like, you know, where I live, I watch oak trees die from just tons of mistletoe taking them over. Okay, if they say, you know, I'm dying because of all my mistletoe, no, it's a parasite.
Okay, I think... What I'm doing is like I've gone into a pitched battle with it, you know, who's right, me or it. And I think that's where the energy drain is going.
Yep. It's just lapping it up.
Mm.
And you're getting more and more exhausted.
Yeah. I often repeat myself and I've been listening back and I repeat myself saying that it's all new and things like that. But the fact is that I'm getting used to the different approaches, the different ways in, the different styles, you know, that this stuff has of pulling me back out of what was a great experience, you know.
Yes. So, Jonathan, tell me a little, give me 6 or 8 sentences on a great experience. What did you see? What did you realize? What happened when you began to attend to awareness?
Well, I began to feel peaceful. The day was easier. The things I had to do in the day just seemed to flow better. Your book started to make more sense. I felt like I had more time to read your book. It was easier to be nice to people. Lots of things like that. I didn't feel like I was under a load of pressure.
Now, can you feel your energy change as you recite that list?
Yeah, and as I'm reciting it, the voice is saying, and you caused an accident, you idiot. Yeah. And that's the state. And it's a new... It's a new psychological state.
Yeah.
And
now, let me ask you. This is sort of slightly off the subject, but not really. Do you actually believe that you caused an accident?
Yes.
Okay. And now all of you believe that. So you are in control of life.
No, but I was in control of my car.
Were you?
Well, not at that moment.
That's right.
Because I was preoccupied with something.
Uh-huh, something that maybe conditioning was working hard to distract you with?
Yeah, I had an important meeting. I was stressed out.
Because you were getting a lot of information about how important this was and how you need to be and what was at stake and what if this and what if that, and that's what you were focused on instead of your driving? So now, given that, if there was a control involved, who would you say actually caused the accident?
The conditioning.
Yeah. I want you to listen to this again. Okay, because I would agree with you. If there is any, if we're going to assign blame, which I think is, you know, always a big waste of time, but if we want to do that, if something or someone is going to get blamed, then let's blame the actual cause. Let's name the one who was instigating.
And what does what purpose does that serve?
Well, what it's doing is telling you that this is your fault. You caused this. And my only point is, when we break it down, what we get to is, well, no, actually, you were, we could say, victimized by it. You were the recipient of all of this fear-mongering and hateful information and that sort of thing, and you fell for it. You have a lifetime of falling for it, and you fell for it once again. Yeah. But you weren't doing it.
I think the thing that I get caught up in here, though, I mean, in this particular incident, fortunately, I wasn't injured. Nobody was injured. But it's this interface between the inside of my head and the reality, external reality, which has really got me really stuck, I think, with this practice. Because what if somebody, let's say somebody had been killed at an accident. I mean, wouldn't you have to be out of your mind not to hold the driver responsible for that?
Well, maybe, but then that would identify me as somebody out of my mind.
But
here's the deal. Here's the deal, and this is something that you can see around the world, okay? People are, for the most part, pretty much completely unconscious. So if we want to say people are completely responsible when they are unconscious, we can say that. I think it's stupid, personally, but, I mean, we could do that. What we do is pretend that unconscious people are conscious. And then we blame unconscious people for acts that happen when they are unconscious as if they were conscious. They're not. There's nobody home. There's nobody home when it happens. So if we really cared, then our priority would be on helping people be more conscious. But you see, when people are conscious, they're not good consumers. They're not easy to control. They have a tendency to look in places that an egocentric, karmically conditioned society does not want them to look for how to live their lives. So, no, I don't think so. I think our whole way of going about it is absurd. We have people living in absolutely hideous circumstances, that they have absolutely no choice about changing. And then we want to hold those people to the same standard as ourselves, as if our lives are the same, and they are not.
But I think what I was trying to say, I mean, the thing that I love about your practice is it's so practical.
Yes.
But at the same time, I can't stand in front of a police officer and say, well, hang on a minute, I've got a spiritual practice. So
no.
That's the area.
Jonathan,
and I'm calling
Jonathan,
it an
Jonathan,
an
Jonathan, 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 Jonathan. Excuse me, you were talking oranges and baseball bats.
Well, I know.
What is the law? You were driving the car that the law says caused the accident. Okay, great. You're going to do whatever. You know, you're speeding down the road, the officer pulls you over, you're going to get a speeding ticket. Is that an argument for self-hatred? No. What it's an argument for is figuring out what's going on. How can I pay better attention? How can I be more conscious? Does
right.
that mean you'll never have another car accident? You'll never get another ticket? No, it does not mean that. Being conscious, being aware, being present, paying attention is not the same as control. All I'm saying is there is never an excuse for allowing self-hatred to beat somebody up. I don't care what the person did.
Right.
Hatred is never going to be the answer for anything. Compassion and loving kindness is the thing that will assist a person to be who they ultimately want to be and who we all want them to be.
Well, that's what I've been trying to revive, you know.
Well, part of you is, but part of you is arguing.
Yeah, that's
true. On the conditioning side, that you really should be blamed and punished.
Well, it's more that I'm just, it just seems so blindingly obvious that this is the world that I live in, and
well,
this is,
certainly.
You know, and it's that. And I think, but the other thing today is, like, I started reading your book, Trying to Be Human, and I think you get to about page 6, and you say, look, sit and meditate. And I just thought, well, actually...
Well, I
know,
probably actually don't say that, but
well,
we'll let that go for the moment.
That's how I sort of received it. As
that's
in,
how
like,
the person reading it received it.
You can read, you can think, you can analyze, but I got it that this is a sitting practice.
Well, this is a practice of attention, awareness, and loving kindness. It's a practice of compassion. So I will say to someone, the fastest way that you can get from misery to freedom and joy is through paying attention, through awareness. The fastest way to wake up and be able to pay attention and be aware is by sitting in meditation, which is not the same as you should sit in meditation.
I'm sorry, Sherry. Projection.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna go right ahead and suggest something that I think would be helpful for you at this juncture. And that is for you to drop the conversation in your head and turn your attention to what you know to be true. Okay, and that can, you can, if I were you, I would be having a very good time figuring out what that means. So kindness is a happier way to live than self-hatred. Focusing on what I'm grateful for in life leads to a greater sense of well-being than being in a conversation about what's wrong and what's lacking. So I'm going to turn my attention to gratitude, say, and I'm going to make huge lists of all of the things in my life that I'm grateful for. And when that conversation of self-hatred attempts to interfere, I'm just going to say, no, thank you. And I'm going to write down on my list, you know, I'm really grateful that I can recognize self-hatred for what it is. I'm really grateful that I know how to turn my attention. I'm grateful that I can turn my attention to loving kindness and compassion and generosity. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, thank you for that response.
You're very welcome. And I hope that you will do it.
Well, I'm back on it, so.
Excellent. Take care of him. It's job one. Yeah, all of the other stuff that happened, you know, what the Buddha taught, You have one person to save from suffering. You have one person to assist, to awaken, and live a life of peace and freedom and joy. In your case, his name is Jonathan. Okay? Let me know.
Thank you, Sherry.
You're very welcome, sir. Talk to you.
And
soon.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to stop, drop, and breathe and hear from Sangha Market.
All right.
Okay.
What's this from Living Compassion? If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Hi. I've called in the past. I'm just checking back in.
Good.
Of course, I was trying to think of all kinds of critical things to talk about, but I do have something that's on my mind. When I was putting together my practice plan, I set an intention around being kinder to myself and taking better care of myself. And what I've noticed is, and this is sort of a lifelong journey, I'm in the helping profession, so I have a tendency to have a hard time saying no, and I'm always thinking about, is this going to help my clients, and who needs what more than I need it? And it's sort of like scuba diving where you get passion of the deep, you don't know which way's up. So when I try to kind of tune in to what's taking care of me, I don't even know which voice to believe anymore. And so I end up sort of giving myself away. And to me, it feels like I make decisions primarily based out of fear, you know. So I guess I'm just looking for some
connect that up for me, would you? So the voice, you make decisions. I was going right along with you until you said you make decisions out of fear. Tell me a little about that fear, would you?
Well, it's like if it's my clients, it's, oh, if I don't do this, and it's not going to help them, or it's going to hurt them, or I'm not being a good professional, I'm not doing what it takes to get paid what I'm worth, or something like that. Oh, I'm not going to have enough money. I'm going to go broke. I'm going to be an egg lady. But, you know, there's a whole continuum. If it's friends and family, it's I love them. I care about them. I want to be with them. I want to respond to what they need and want. And so I can just abandon, they'll be hurt, whatever it is. But I'm making choices for fear of what could happen if I said no.
Yeah.
And the truth is, if I say no, then I'm beating myself up for having said no. If I say yes, I'm beating myself up because then I'm exhausted again.
Time out. Okay.
Okay.
You're not beating yourself up. Okay.
Oh, I'm not? Oh,
no. Right? You're being beaten up. And that's, you know, the way we can tell that is that it doesn't matter what you do, you get a beating.
Yeah, it's the truth, but I don't know how to get out of it.
Well, I do. Isn't that handy? So the thing about it is, It's so perfect because we are taught to believe that the beating is for a reason, right? So
yeah.
You know, if you have a little kid with an abusive parent, okay, every time the parent gets really stressed out and upset, the parent smacks the child around. Now, the child is getting information that it's because you did X, Y, or Z. Okay, there's
right.
always something to point at. Or you're just a rotten kid, which is, you know, covers a lot of territory. And
mm-hmm.
so that's why you're getting this beating. But, of course, when we step back and look at it, we know the reason the child is getting the beating is because the parent wants to beat something up to dissipate some stress.
That feels right.
Yes. So if we apply that to us grown-up human beings here, self-hate has its life in the energy that comes from you being afraid, stressed, anxious, upset, whatever. So what, no matter what direction you go in, it's going to come at you with basically the same story, and it's going to punish you to keep you in a place of trying to figure out what to do to make it stop.
Yeah. That's what I feel. It's like all I could think today was, well, everything I know to do is not working. You know, I'm miserable either way I go. So I thought, okay, well, I'll give you an idea because...
Okay. Now, have you read There's Nothing Wrong With You?
I actually attended the retreat. I did.
You did.
So
how long ago did you do that?
A couple years ago.
Yeah, well, come back again, okay? you need a booster shot, okay?
I guess so.
But this might bring it back for you, okay?
Okay.
So... You can you step back again and see the person who cares so deeply? Can you see her?
Yeah.
Yeah, who just wants to take care of the world, wants everybody to be all right, wants people to feel good and be happy and have a good life.
Yeah.
You know her?
Yeah.
And so you also know, I'm guessing, that what she gets as a reward for all of that caring, that love and caring, is being beaten. She gets worked nearly to death, and she gets beaten for not having done more.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So you know who she is. Can you see her? Can you actually get a mental picture of her, or can you feel what it is to be her?
Yeah, she's pretty young.
About how old?
Hmm?
About how old?
4 or 5.
Now, do you have children?
Yeah, I have 2.
You have 2 children. Okay.
Yeah.
So you know what it's like to take care of a 4 or 5 year old child.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do they need?
Lots of love, lots of affection, lots of attention, and some structure.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. They need a safe place to experiment with being alive on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And they need that safety needs to involve, as you say, structure, but massive doses of unconditional love.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So you have your assignment, don't you? That's what you're going to provide for that little girl. Okay, so now you have 3 children.
Okay.
Those 2 you already raised and this one that you're getting ready to raise. Okay. And so imagine, let's imagine this. You know, somebody knocked on the door, and they're standing next to them is this adorable little 4 or 5 year old girl, and what they say is, you know, we really can't take care of her, and we've heard that you're a really kind and loving person, and so we're going to leave her with you. They would have made a good choice, right?
Yeah.
They would have picked the right door to knock on.
Yeah, they would have.
Okay. So now, here you've got this child. So your whole life is going to have to change. Right? Because now you have a 4 or 5 year old that you've got to think about all the time. Make sure that she's okay all the time. Okay. So one of the things that you're going to want to do immediately is structure your life such that you can have, say, an hour every day of what people like to call quality time with this child, okay, where you will give her that undivided attention, unconditional love, support, care. You'll talk with her. You'll listen to her. You'll do things with her, okay?
Okay.
Now, what time of day is that going to be?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Very
good. I actually thought we were talking. I thought, oh, my God, I'll have to make sure she eats 3 meals and she gets to bed on time. All the things I don't do for myself.
Exactly right. You got it. That's exactly your assignment.
Oh, thanks, Sherry.
Yeah, because what you know is that really is who is bearing the brunt of all of this, I would say, misguided concern about other people.
Yeah, and I have a sense it's there. It's just like it's out of control. I mean, it's on a rampage.
Yes. Well, I'm going to promise you, it's self-hate. It's self-hate, and it has taken the kind of the sweetest part of you, that open-hearted, loving, caring, nurturing part of you, and it has managed to use it against you.
Yeah, I think that's true, and it's the ultimate in sort of a clever disguise, because it's the thing that lays me low the quickest.
Yes.
You know, when I think I haven't been loving or haven't cared, I almost have no argument for it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
Okay.
All right, so you've got your assignment, and you're gonna report back.
Now, remember,
it is not a contest. Okay? You can't turn this, I mean, you could, but I'm hoping you won't, turn this over to karmic conditioning to use against you. You know,
you mean raising a five-year-old?
Hmm?
The raising a five-year-old part of the taking.
Yeah, so then those are the standards. Well, you didn't do that very well, and, well, you didn't take care of her then, and, well, you didn't eat right today, and you did, you know. Okay.
Yeah, and that's exactly where it would go.
Yeah, so we're not having any of that. This is the relationship between you and that little girl, and nobody else gets to participate in it.
Okay.
Especially no abusive, mean people.
I got a whole flotilla of them.
All right. So you'll let me know?
Yeah, I will.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I think I can take that assignment on, too.
Very, very, very good. I think we can all take that assignment on, huh?
Yes. Yes, indeed. And we have another call here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Okay, we lost that caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Justin calling.
Hey, Justin. How are you?
Good. Wow, this is so great. First time talking to you. This is fabulous.
And great to have you with us. What's going
Thanks.
On?
Thanks. I've been having a bit of, well, let me start in the beginning here. Yeah, I have a 2.5-year-old. She's just going on to 3 years now. And that's incidentally how old my practice is. So it's been interesting to see my daughter grow and to see my practice kind of develop along with it. So that's been pretty neat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my practice right now is a toddler kind of not bumping into stuff anymore, but trying to, you know, develop fully, right, or just blossoming. So one of the things that I've really been able to see, and this is the time, I've been reading the Time Out for Parents. I just read it for the third, fourth time very recently here. And one of the areas that I'm really kind of resonating with is the section where you talk about emotion and how, you know, as a parent, you really want to demonstrate the full range of emotion, because any time you depress any kind of emotion, it kind of leads to depression.
Yeah.
And I, you know, this is the kind of the first time I've actually starting to see that, and how that kind of relates to how, you know, how I process emotion.
Yeah.
And I guess that's my issue, is that a lot of emotions are suppressed. I mean, I'm always pushing it down. And one of the areas I have is a lot of issues with is, and I'm sure a lot of other people, is anger. And for me, it's not so much, you know, losing my cool. It's actually the opposite, where I never lose my cool. And it always leads to kind of a very depressed and a depression after that. You know, and now I'm starting to really see that very clearly. And so the area that I'd like guidance is on how do I get to that point where I feel safe enough to be able to start expressing emotion more fully, just because it feels like, you know, self-hate kind of has me checkmated here, because every time I feel like I'm going to lose it, I always feel like I'm going to be blaming someone or something, right? And, you know, the question is, how can I express anger without, you know, coming down on someone? Because every single time, and I've been looking at this for the past month or two, it feels that every single situation, if I have to express my anger, it's going to be towards someone.
Yeah.
And so maybe just, you know, maybe if you can just give me some guidance here, that would be,
well,
that'd be really great.
Now, to me, what happens with that, well, let me ask you about it. So you're going along. Are you aware of what you're feeling before it gets to that point, or do you become aware of the feelings when it gets to the place where it's labeled anger and it's towards someone?
Yeah, and I'm only starting to realize it when I hit that flashpoint. So it's, you know, like leading up to it, usually I'm just going along. And I'm not seeing it as it's coming. It kind of just catches me, you know. It's like turning a corner and there it is.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going along and essentially something stops you, frustrates you in the sense of, you're going in a direction and something gets in your way, and boom,
that's right.
There's that reaction.
That's right. And then it's
go ahead.
And then the reaction is always, well, it's my wife's fault, or it's my daughter's Dee Dee. It's Dee Dee's fault, or it's my father-in-law, or my mom, or you know, or whatever the situation is. It always feels like I get to that point and I have to bottle everything up, because it always feels like it's going to be vented towards someone if I don't.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Oh, it makes absolute sense. So here is my first encouragement, and that is to own the energy in your body as your own. So there you are with the vitality, the energy, the life force that's animating you. Okay? And we learn as small children how to monitor that, and how to control it to to the best of our ability. Okay, and so if it's in that range, then it's fine. We're fine. That's our definition of we're fine. We're okay. When it gets out of that range, because it means something about us, so basically it goes out of the range of okay, and I'm going to get blamed for that. Okay? But
yep.
If I can blame you for it, then I don't have to get blamed for it. I mean, it's just such a little kid, I didn't do it, my brother did it. You know, if I can sick the parents on him, then I can stay out of trouble. Are you with me on this?
Yeah, I can see that exactly.
Yeah. So our first job is to say, okay, the energy in my body is mine. This is all mine. It's all about me. There's no fault. There's no blame. But it is mine, and so it's mine to take responsibility for. And once we do that, then we're really freed up to begin to have a new relationship with the energy in our bodies. We can become curious about it, what it actually is, what its potential is, without needing to be afraid of it or try to control it or, you know, all of those things that we learned in childhood. So you can begin to explore and experiment. So when the energy is there, when you are doing whatever, I don't know what you do in your life, but you'll go around in your life and you're watching as the energy gets higher and as it gets lower. You're watching what happens with different amounts of sleep. You're watching what happens when you haven't eaten, when you do eat, when you eat certain things, when you get information that says you need to augment the energy, or you need to affect it in a way that gives you more. You know, so maybe you get information to go get a cup of coffee or to eat sugar or something like that.
Right.
And then you get information that says, okay, and now it's time to calm it down. So maybe you have a drink of something or whatever. Okay. And so the first stage of it is simply watching that and watching how that. Are you still there?
I'm still here, yeah.
Okay. I keep hearing these clicks. I can't tell if you've left.
Sorry, my phone might be,
Okay. Not a problem.
Clicking.
So, That's the first step, is watching the fluctuations, okay? Then,
yeah, I can do that.
Then what you do is begin to look at how you would like to affect the energy. So you might add exercise. Maybe you start jogging, or maybe you do yoga, or maybe you grab your daughter and start dancing, okay? And you watch what happens what the voices say when you are engaged in various types of physical movement that is affecting that vitality in your body.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And then when you do that for a little while, You'll let me know, and we'll explore the next steps.
Okay. So it's really just kind of increasing the granularity of the awareness.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I mean, you know, to a large extent, that's kind of where my practice has kind of been pushing or guiding me. But it's just, anger is just always, it gets to that flashpoint, and then,
yeah.
and you're right, it's kind of, being just a bit, so you're saying just being a lot more aware on how that builds
yes.
up because
yes.
Okay.
You see, I don't even for myself. We just call it anger,
right?
And because we have all of this conditioning that okay, I'm either going to get blamed or it's somebody else's fault because we have that kind of stuff going on. It's easy for it to go down that track, but really. I think the more you watch it, the more you'll see it's just energy that is building, 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 building. I got it. I'm in control. It's fine. I'm okay. I'm okay. Something happens that interferes with it, and boom, it comes out in this huge burst that people want to call anger, because it can be associated with that conversation of how this is your fault, or I want to break your face, or you know, whatever gets connected with that. But you could also just stand in the middle of the room and jump up and down and scream at the top of your lungs and say, you know, I have so much energy, I just may self-destruct here. All the same thing.
Yeah.
Or even, I am really, really, really enthusiastic right now. I have so much energy, I may, you know, go invent something. Anything.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's helpful.
Good.
No, that's helpful. I'll report back.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Jerry.
Thanks.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us tonight. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Music by Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I had a sense from that last call of kind of the fun of being a researcher and just investigating more deeply.
Yeah, that's a great image, Michael. If we hadn't gotten all of that information at such an early age, think of the fun we could have with, you know, just, it's like, well, it's like music, you know, if the, I don't know anything about music, so that's probably a really bad example, but, you know, like if we had whatever range gives us like three hootie-hooties, you know, how much music would we make? But instead, we have this whole range of sounds to draw upon and to touch all the parts of ourselves and to interact with and move to and relate to. And we want to be fully human. And as soon as we take out that how I am is somebody's fault, I mean, really, when we step back, nuts is that?
Yeah.
How I am as a creature is a matter of fault?
Yes.
Insane.
Yeah, real lack of responsibility there.
Yeah, and imposed. You know, it takes us so long even to question the system. You know, so many of us just get trapped forever in the assumption that the information is right, I'm wrong. And when we get to that point of, wait a minute, you know, what if it's not about right and wrong? Now, okay, now we're freed up to start playing, start exploring.
Yes. And we have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Jen from Rhinebeck, New York.
Hey, Jen.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I know we're running out of time, so let's see if I can make it concise and clear. So I feel like part of what I've been doing with practice is focusing so much attention on figuring out the story and, you know, dismantling the story around everything and the thoughts, that the piece about feelings has been unclear for me. So I think in that process, I'm catching on to the fact that I might have been ignoring the parts of me that are actually experiencing things and having feelings about that. And I just keep getting this idea that, like, okay, as long as I dissolve the story, everything's going to disappear. There won't be any sadness. There won't be any loneliness. There won't be any stuff, because all those feelings are just generated by stories.
Yes. And if we look at that through the, you know, kind of via the last call, the last conversation.
Yeah.
So there you are, a little kid, and it's not okay to feel. And so you have to, I mean, this is a short version of it and certainly not the whole story, but you have to come up with a really good reason for how you are, and especially for how you feel. Is this true?
Yeah.
So you're going.
Yeah, I guess so. But I feel like it's. I don't even know if I even. Yeah, I guess it was not even conscious that I was having to do that.
Oh no.
Just wasn't even okay to feel.
That's right.
Yeah.
So if we think about being around people now, this is one of my favorites about this. So somebody says, I'm gonna leave my marriage, and you know, makes this announcement to whomever, friends, relatives, colleagues. I've decided to leave my marriage. Really? Why? Well, I've just decided I want to.
But there's got to be a reason.
Oh, that would be so unacceptable, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I just don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
No. Who's at fault? What's wrong? Justify your position. And if you don't have a really good justification, we're going to reject you.
Yeah. And blame you.
Blame you.
Yeah. Like,
so,
with...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say, like with loneliness, it's that, okay, you know, I'm not in a relationship. It's been a long time, and there's certain things I miss about that. But it becomes not okay to miss those things, because that's part of a story, and the story is that I'm so terrible, nobody wants to be in relationship with me.
Right.
Yeah.
Because what we get to see with this is, and we, you know, in our practice, we have to keep one eye at least on this all the time. Egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is looking for anything that it
I figured that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Hop onto to make this about you and your fault and what's wrong with you, so it can beat you up and suck the life force out of you.
Yeah.
So, again, those are two really different things, aren't they? So,
yeah,
that's going on. But then over here, we have these people who live in this body identified as Jen, and they have all kinds of feelings and interests and motivations and desires and things they want to pursue and all kinds of things. But again, that is not okay, because you should be a particular way.
Yeah.
You're not. Whose fault it is?
Yeah, I even see that. But like, I've never had one particular passion. Like, I wasn't, you know, at 2 years old, I didn't decide I wanted to be a doctor, and that was my life path. So I've got all these different pieces and parts of me that like to do all these different things.
Yes.
And that I often see as the door for conditioning to
or
self-hate, to be like, well, you don't even have a passion and you can't focus. And, meanwhile, I'll, start ignoring one because, oh, I can't do that. I can't think of doing that for a living, or I don't have time for that. And then, eventually that person resurfaces somehow and they're really not happy.
Exactly. As we wouldn't be. And, the interesting aspect to me about that is if I said to you, I'm feeling really lonely. And you said, really? Why? And I said, well, I'm not in a relationship and I haven't been in a relationship. And, I would like to be, and, I miss this and that and whatever. And you said, well, there's no reason to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would that be like?
You wouldn't be my friend for very long.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. But if I can say, I'm feeling really lonely, and you say, oh, what about that? And I get to talk to you about it and have the feelings and experience them and, it's kind of like reflective listening buddies, right? And, I get to express all that, and I get to have it. There is, again, such a deeply conditioned karmic belief that feelings are something to get over. But we are sentient beings. What we really want is to have our feelings.
Yeah, and I think I've seen really clearly how my thoughts can fuel uncomfortable feelings, or, I can, conditioning will come, put all these thoughts there that, make me feel all the crappy feelings. So I somehow interpreted that as like, oh, if I get rid of the thoughts, then I'll get rid of these uncomfortable feelings.
That's right. Instead of, these are feelings.
Yeah.
Who has these feelings?
Yeah.
What does this person need who has these feelings? Which, we have to keep an eye on, because nothing is going to help us with the feelings that are being generated by self-hate, right?
Yeah, I just saw that when, just the idea of when I was on retreat in May, the whole, I had a real visual of like literally putting the mentor in between that, part and the conditioning.
Yeah.
Like a linebacker or something,
Right.
Literally not letting that feed the feelings that the person's having. So, she's lonely and she gets to be lonely, but she doesn't get to have that, have fuel fed onto that fire.
Yeah, she doesn't have to be beaten up for it and then feel bad and guilty and all of the others. We don't want her to be beaten up, feel bad and guilty, and then feel like those are her feelings that she has to have. As you're saying, what we want to do is protect her from that, because it doesn't have anything to do with her. She learned to go to those places because people put a lot of energy into making her feel bad. But she doesn't need to relish those feelings of being bad, as she will learn to really, it's funny because it's so anti-conditioning that even the words sound strange. But she will, they will learn to truly have and enjoy the full range of human emotion. Did you follow me on that one?
I did,
Yeah,
it just seems so foreign.
It does. You know, you're really sad. Well, you know, enjoy that. It's like, geez.
Yeah. Or
that's pathological.
Yes, pathological. And, you know, there's the immediate comment. It's always like, well, if you were, you know, living in your real Buddha nature, you wouldn't feel any of this. Everything would be okay. And, you know,
yes.
It's another
and you know
turning
what?
Into practice.
And you know what? That is an absolute true statement. That is an absolute true statement. Because you would be enjoying all of it.
Yeah.
And yet conditioning takes that sentence and turns it into, so that means you should flatline blissfully. And if you're not flatlining blissfully, then you're not doing the practice.
Got it.
Rather than, boy, you are really just loving every second of being a human being.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever
that
is.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. It completely had me on that one.
Oh, it completely has a lot of folks.
Sure.
Yeah. That was good though.
Yeah.
That's important stuff. And just that idea that because I really enjoyed seeing that as we went through it. That statement is so true, but it doesn't mean what egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, has made us believe it means.
Yeah, the implication that I'm not doing it right, I haven't reached, you know, enlightenment, whatever, all of that. Yeah, that I'm wrong, basically.
All roads lead there.
Exactly, yeah. So would my homework be similar to the last caller then?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so.
Just, you know, looking for what am I feeling? I'm feeling that. Oh, great. Oh, who is that? You want to talk about that? Oh. Just like a little kid, but just don't do that. Oh, you're feeling angry. Thing that we hear modern parents do with the little don't do that.
All right, great.
Take care.
Thanks so much. Have a great trip.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Jen. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry,
Michael,
thank you so much.
You are so welcome. And I'd like to say talk to you next week, but that's not going to happen since I'll be on an airplane.
Yeah.
But I am going to endeavor to get something going before this trip is over.
Great.
Yeah.
Have a fabulous trip.
All right.
Take care.
Take care.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.